99, proceeded.
Redbird Sports Talk. Interviews and professional sports news all in one place.
Redbird's playing a lot on the outside. Open three for Poindexter. Got it.
The quarterback just couldn't figure out the passing game.
You're listening to Red Zone, only on 103.3 WZND. Blasting off in 3, 2, 1.
These quarterbacks can figure out the passing game. The guys to my left and right, Braden Fogerson, Benjamin Hootie, I'm Mikey Franley. Happy Thursday, birds. Welcome into this edition of the Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. We usually start with the Redbirds, boys, but today, yeah, we've talked a lot of Redbirds recently. There was some pressing news in the world of Major League Baseball we wanted to get to, and I figured a lot of our listeners are Cubs fans, so we will start there. Today in the Tallahassee Democrat, which is the newspaper of local Tallahassee, Florida, I guess. They were told by a local reporter, David Ross on his firing for the Cubs manager's position. He is, quote, not, or he's thankful, and he says, anger is poison for me. If you haven't heard, the Cubs kind of gave Ross the boot unceremoniously and were able to sign Craig Counsell. Ben and I do run a separate Cubs podcast, so if you've listened to that before, I appreciate it. But we'll talk about it a lot here on the Red Zone because, yeah, this is a huge deal. From the get-go. I know Ferguson's opinionated on it as a Cardinals fan. I know Ben and I are as Cubs fans. I want to hear what you guys think because this might have been one of the, if not the biggest offseason moves related to this topic in Cubs history.
Yeah, and who would have expected it to come this early too? Obviously, everyone was kind of had their pins set on Craig Counsell and where he was projected to go. A lot of people thought it was going to be either the Mets or Guardians or a return back to Milwaukee, and then when that news broke on Monday that it was the Chicago Cubs out of left field, I just don't think anyone expected it at all, and it really just, I think, shocked waves across not only the fan bases of Major League Baseball, but as well as front offices and teams in Major League Baseball.
I don't get it. I just feel like the Cubs were supposed to be 1 year away. And all of a sudden they weren't. And, like, even midway through the year, they looked rough. And then they just turned things around. They have all sorts of momentum. They have a really good feel in the clubhouse. As a Cardinal fan, I was really, I mean, obviously not like our team was going to do well, whether the Cubs were good or not. But the Cubs were kind of rolling again and looking good. And, like, that's something that a manager does. And if a team is able to make a turnaround like that, that should shine. Like, as in, like, the manager's doing well. And I just don't get why you replace the guy who's turned this Cubs team around and that seemed to have a lot of support in the clubhouse from what I thought. I mean, I could be wrong. For Craig Counsell, who is a regular season manager and we haven't seen much out of the postseason.
I completely disagree with you. I'm just going to start right there. First of all, David Ross, to his credit, yes, you're not wrong. They were close. They were getting there. They were 1 year away. But by hiring Craig Counsell, you're getting a guy that was able to make the most out of a roster year in and year out that was consistently in the bottom third of the league in payroll. On top of that, he's one of the best managers in the game, and I've seen it in Cubs-Brewers matchups. Counsell consistently outmanaged David Ross all the time. And while you're saying, yes, he is a regular season manager.
I also don't want to feel like I'm putting too much on his postseason deal either.
Right.
You know, he hasn't had a whole lot, but.
Exactly. I just think that if you get him into Chicago, you make him the highest paid manager of all time. He's going to get a roster of players and he's going to get a bigger payroll. I think that by getting one of the, it's similar to Joe Maddon in that light where Joe Maddon was with Tampa for all those years and made a lot out of a roster of kind of misfits, and now it just everything that this situation, it just feels like Joe Maddon yet again.
Cody Bellinger won the Silver Slugger for the utility position in the National League. Just got that alert on my phone. Pretty cool. But I think that goes into what I was thinking I was going to say about this. There needed to be a move that, one, cemented the Cubs as a team that is going to go for it, both because they want to and they need to have a manager who could manage late in the season into the playoffs. And two, it's a figurative move to tell people like Cody Bellinger or tell people like Shohei Ohtani, we are going for it. We are bringing in a manager who could win the World Series. We're bringing in a guy who has been there before with a roster that was much worse than what we could have here. And that's why they made him the highest paid manager in baseball's history. because he's just a he's a coach that brings that level. And I don't know where that came in Craig Council's career. One criticism I will slightly agree with is that people have always said, why are we treating Craig Council like Connie Mack over the last week? Well, because he did so many things in Milwaukee with a subpar roster. If he comes to Chicago now and the Cubs retain Cody Bellinger and they bring in a Shohei Ohtani or someone like that and they are underwhelming, yeah, then we start to be like, man, what did we do? Like, this is bad if we're going to have to punt on this. But for the time being, I'm going to look at the glass half full and say, yes, this is the right move. I feel terrible for Rossi, but it's cruel, but it was the right move, I think, to cement yourself as a team that's, hey, we're going to compete. We have the money. Time to play like the big boys.
Did he have a subpar? I mean, he had, like, the best bullpen in baseball for a year or two.
You're talking about Council?
Council.
But that's because he was able to.
And then he had a really good outfield, very talented outfield. He had. They had pretty good defense. I mean, Lorenzo Cain was amazing by himself, but they had pretty solid defense as a whole. I mean, they weren't going to light the world on fire. They weren't the Dodgers or anything. And, I mean, every single team in the NL Central has been beneath whoever is the best team in the NL East and the NL West at any given time since 2017.
But
I don't know.
He was able to utilize those guys well. And that was my biggest complaint with Rossi this year is...
You don't think that he did?
He was able to do the right things. We talked about... I mean, that was my biggest complaint throughout the entire year as there's guys struggling. And more importantly, Ian Happ... consistently every single day in the three hole. That's not happening with Craig Council. As soon as he sees a week of slip ups, it's like you're moving down. You got a couple young kids that come up from the minor leagues that are looking to make an impact while you're trying to make the postseason. Those kids got to play. Rossi never played those guys. I guarantee you Craig Council gives them a fair amount of at bats to just try and give them a chance and make their mark to, you know, try and push this team to the postseason.
Okay.
I think if Craig Council was the manager of the Chicago Cubs this year, they would have been in the playoffs by a couple more games than they were with Rossi.
That's Ben's recurring quote. And to think that they were so close with David Ross begs me to believe that you're right, Ben. I think that they would have made the playoffs with Craig Council this year, somebody who is a nominee for that Coach of the Year in the National League and may very well get it. I think this was absolutely the right move. And that's I know Fogerson had said openly that he wanted to talk about it because he disagreed. What does this mean for David Ross? Let's move on to that, because I think that's a tough topic. I think everybody feels bad for him. As I was saying at the beginning of this segment, he got interviewed today by a local newspaper where he currently lives in Tallahassee, and he was candidly upset. But he said, anger is like poison to me. Like, I'm not going to let myself just rot in anger and say, you know, curse you, Cubs. Like, at the end of the day, he's thankful for his experience. Is there another open job for David Ross by March, or will he take a whole year off?
I think it depends on his affinity for the Cubs, doesn't it? Like, if he wants a job as a, you know, say a bench coach or something, I think he could probably do a solid job somewhere if he wanted. But does he want to do that in, you know, Tropicana Field or something? Like, does he want to be an AL team? Does he want to? If he is deciding he wants to be somewhere, where does he want to be? Does he want to face the Cubs several times a year? Does he want to just be in a completely different league and see if that's any different? It's completely up to him, but I think that he could serve a job somewhere. I do just think that, you know, I'm not entirely sure how many spots are open right now.
The Mets filled it, and the Angels filled it.
We got Angels just filled it, so we got Houston and San Diego.
Yeah.
That's the last two spots, and I don't think they're looking for a guy like Ross.
No.
It makes sense for Ross to take the year off. He's still cashing a check with the Cubs. But something I always talk to you about, Mikey, was the fact that he went from the broadcast booth with no coaching experience right to the MLB. And even though he obviously was a 15-year MLB vet, something around there, even those guys that are 15-year MLB vets still take a while to develop in minor league systems as coaches, get themselves in the in-game management, whatever it might be. It would make sense for him to probably take the year off and then take a bench coach job somewhere next year and kind of solidify himself as a potential future manager if he were to want to do so going forward.
We can't forget the comparisons that were drawn between David Ross and an early Craig Council when David Ross was first given the job in Chicago. I think that he could be something. David Ross could very well be something. I don't think he ruined his reputation by his stint with the Cubs. By no means. No. I think he'll get another job if he wants to someday.
So I have a question. One of you two mentioned wanting to be able to prove to whomever, whatever free agent is looking at teams, that the Cubs are for real and that their managerial choice proves that they are going for something.
Correct.
Does this mean that if they don't land either Ohtani or at least someone like a really marquee guy that's going to get butts in seats and get people buying jerseys, that it wasn't worth getting counsel anyway?
I will disagree with you there. I think everything was worth it. Counsel was 100% worth it.
I would agree with that, by the way. I was just asking what you thought.
But if they don't go and get and spend money or get the marquee guys, then you seriously have to question the front office.
Butts in the seats is not the problem, though. Butts in seats will happen either way.
Oh, yeah.
Butts in the seats has been the bottom line for the Cubs for decades. My issue and my hope and what I'm excited about with Council is that this means that since Butts will be in the seats, time to put a winning team together for Council's entire contract, not just a flash in the pan.
And I also think it's – even if they don't get the marquee guys, the Cubs still have a really good foundation in place. I'm almost 100% confident that they are going to sign a lot of free agents. Like, I'm right there. But they do have a good foundation in place with a lot of young guys coming up. I feel like Council can make the most of that. And if they don't make the playoffs this year, then I still think it's a step in the right direction, because you were able to probably, if you're not getting free agents, you were able to develop guys. You were able to make the most out of Nico Horner and Dansby Swanson and Ian Happ or whatever it might be.
What's their biggest need as a team, would you say, at the major league level?
I would say get that impact bat for the middle of your lineup.
Okay.
Because you're more than likely going to lose Cody Bellinger or retain him, whatever that might be. But I know Mikey mentioned Ohtani, and I didn't even think that was a possibility until some rumors came out in recent days.
That correlated with Craig Council.
Yeah, as well as potential trade targets.
Let's move on to this real quick as we end the MLB segment.
Ooh, I got good feelings about this one.
I'm going to talk about Jason Benetti. Yeah. I want to talk about, if everyone hasn't heard this, Jason Benetti is leaving the White Sox for the Detroit Tigers, taking a proverbial step down when it comes to organizational quality, I would say, even though I make fun of the White Sox all the time. Well, because he's getting a check, I'm sure. And Jason Benetti is not by any means a bad announcer. In fact, he's one of the best, in my opinion, in the whole league. He's worked with ESPN. He's worked with Fox. He's done the World Baseball Classic. He's done the Olympics. He's done huge playoff games. He's done every White Sox game for a number of years. And he will be calling the World Series someday if Joe Davis ever gives that job up. So that stinks for the White Sox to lose that voice. It's almost as bad as when the Cubs lost Lancaster. It's probably worse, to be honest.
No, this is probably biased. This is horrible. And honestly, I never really knew the impact that Benetti had on White Sox fans until this news came out today. The White Sox are a miserable team ran by an old slumlord named Jerry Reinsdorf. And I'm not even a White Sox fan, but I feel horrible for them, because you're going to have to sit and watch a miserable baseball team for another year. And the
not
only thing that made it enjoyable for the last two seasons while they've wiped away their window was Jason Benetti making the games interesting and fun day in and day out for 162. And they've lost that. And it's all on Jerry Reinsdorf. And for more icing on the cake, they lost it to their interdivision rival, the Detroit Tigers, who I think are just as bad of an organization as the White Sox.
I think the White Sox still technically have a leg up on Detroit, just because they are from the third biggest market in baseball. Even though they're the little brother team, they're still the third biggest market in baseball. So it's, I think that's definitely a step down, and I think it says a lot about the organization that Jason is going to go make more money there. And I think what does it mean for Steve Stone then too? Because I think Stoney was obviously a solid announcer for a long time, but I think he had that chemistry with Benetti where Steve Stone wasn't like making people annoyed per se. I think a lot of people don't like that. So the whole thing, I mean, that job's going to have a line out the door to get that spot. Don't get me wrong, but it's just
whoever they get is not going to replace Jason Benetti, and it's going to be very hard for him to win over Sox fans. Depending on how long he ends up sticking around.
I'd like to see former Red Zone, former WZN Sports Director Joe Brand get a shot at it. He works for the Blackhawks, does in their pre and post fill-in play-by-play. He has filled in play-by-play for the White Sox before. Saw some people on Twitter saying that. Love to see one of our very own go get that position. Coming up on the Red Zone, we have Lori Hernandez, not live in studio, but Kaylee Sugimoto and I had a chance to talk to the Olympian just a couple weeks ago. We have some highlights from that interview and some discussion with Kaylee. Join the show. You're listening to the Red Zone. We'll be right back. Lori Hernandez is an American gymnast, two-time medalist, silver and gold, silver and individual, right, Kaylee, and then gold for the team,
yes.
I believe. And she
yes.
was awesome when we got to talk to her. If you haven't heard, if you're not on campus, you visited ISU, talked to the ISU gymnastics team, to some clubs on campus, and then Kaylee and I were lucky enough to also be in on that interview, or that little sit-down, I think we should probably call it. It was with us and the team and her. We're going to hear a little bit from her in a little bit, but first, Kaylee, if you don't know Kaylee Sugimoto, you probably should, because she comes on Red Zone all the time. Great reporter for the Vedette and WZND. But we had a great time talking to Lori.
Yeah, definitely. And she had like a lot of inspiring things to tell, not only gymnasts, such as gymnast specific skills and advice for mental advice for them, but also just for the average person or someone trying to transition from being an athlete to a student. So pretty cool stuff.
We'll talk a lot about this after the audio plays. One thing that was so cool about something I've never experienced, we were in on the interview with Lori and then the ISU gymnastics team, your former teammates. And for me, I felt tall because there was a lot of gymnasts in the room and I'm 5'10". But no, it was really cool because a lot of them had a lot of questions for Lori about finding your identity after you're retired from gymnastics or after you're done with gymnastics. Because a lot of them, as Kaylee and I discussed afterwards, college might be the end of their gymnastics career. And they, like her, were wondering, like, hey, this, am I facing this identity crisis? And she had some really cool things to say about that, which you'll hear now on the Red Zone.
She's competed in elite gymnastics competitions, snatched 2 Olympic medals, and won Dancing with the Stars. Now she's an undergrad. Lori Hernandez has spent her entire life dedicated to the sport of gymnastics. She competed in the 2016 Summer Olympic Games, where she won a gold medal for Team USA and an individual silver on beam. As a student at NYU, she is now facing the biggest challenge of her life, simply being bad at things.
You're starting from ground zero, you know, but there was an adjustment period of understanding that I'm going to be really bad at this. And that was a hard thing to just let happen.
Most Olympic gymnasts stick with the sport after their elite career and continue to compete in college. However, Hernandez decided to use college to embrace the parts of herself that she didn't get a chance to, and now majoring in acting and creative writing.
For me, I had auditioned and applied to NYU Tisch, and when I got in, I met a bunch of people who had been doing acting and theater since they were little kids, and I had been doing gymnastics since I was a little kid, so I felt really behind and had just like a lot of imposter syndrome when I got in, because I was like, I have no experience doing this. I just know that I'm really interested into it and this could be fun.
But the transition from full-time athlete to full-time student is anything but easy. Once Hernandez retired from a sport where her self-worth was tied to catching a bar or landing on a 4-inch wide piece of wood, she found it difficult to leave behind that perfectionist mindset going into the real world.
It's hard because your brain kind of plays tricks on you and tells you that this is the only thing that you can do. And then you stop and then you're like, wait, but that was the world I just came from and now I'm what feels like the real world and I don't know how this world works at all.
But like her mom always said, Hernandez was always more than the sport that she played. And in an athlete culture where performance is so heavily emphasized, she is lucky enough to have known that at such an early age.
But when I was a little girl, she used to always tell me, you know, you're Lori, who just so happens to be a gymnast. You're not just Lori the gymnast. You're much more than that. I didn't know what that meant. I was a child. But the older I got and the more I started to like transition out of sport into other things, the more I could hear my mom's voice in my head being like, you're not just Lori the gymnast. It's just something that you do. It's not all that you are.
For Red Zone, I'm Kaylee Sugimoto.
To go from an Olympian to a student is a crazy thing. And Kaylee and I talked about that when we were there. But Kaylee, you were kind of telling me that's not that rare. I mean, a lot of these people find their peak in gymnastics when they're barely 15, 16 years old.
Gymnastics is a very young sport. Like, the age to get into the Olympics is 16. And even 15-year-olds can get into the Olympics if they turn 16 that year. And there's been a big shift in gymnastics lately with the rise of mental health awareness, and especially with the entire Larry Nassar thing, the Larry Nassar events that happened. It really exposed a lot of gyms around the country of other types of abuse that was going on, like verbal and emotional abuse. And there's a slow shift in elite gymnastics right now that's happening where the gymnasts are around 18, 19, 20, but for the generation of gymnasts that are in college right now, they were in that kind of elite program when they were 15 or 16. So it's kind of fizzling out, but we still have some remainder gymnasts there.
So how does that work in terms of like longevity, like starting that early and then you know, that's first of all, are there ever times where that's not your peak and you kind of peak a little bit later? But also, like, how long can a gymnast's career last if their peak is at 15 when a lot of other athletes are, you know, 10, 15 years down the line?
I mean, for me personally, I had to get double hip surgery my freshman, sophomore year, somewhere around there. And that was pretty much the end of my gymnastics career, and I was 18. So honestly, not a lot of longevity there, especially if you train so hard during your younger years. And a lot of the times why coaches push so hard during the younger years is because you haven't fully developed that mental capability yet of becoming scared of skills. So if they tell you to do something, you just do it because you don't really have that. You don't really form like fear yet, if that makes sense.
Kaylee shoveled the hard work of turning a 40-minute talk into a 2.5-minute bite that you heard there. But one of my favorite quotes that Lori said that I'm glad was featured in that was her mom saying that you are not just Lori the gymnast, you're Lori the person who happens to be a gymnast. And I think that's something that a lot of people, both gymnasts and generally athletes, have to come to terms with after they are done being an athlete. And I think especially from gymnastics, during the break, we're talking about people that we know who were homeschooled and only focused on gymnastics their own life, or Kaylee herself and Lori talking about that. I mean, Kaylee, could you shed a little bit of light on like what that's like dedicating your whole life to it and then walking away?
It's honestly really daunting, especially when you have tied everything that you know to a sport, and in this case, gymnastics. I didn't really know what I was outside of it. And I mean, I told you guys earlier that I didn't attend a full day of school from the fourth grade until college. Like my first day of freshman year was technically my first full day of school. And that was a little weird. And I think it was also just the transition into college and finding stuff that I was passionate about academically really opened that. And it kind of just made me think, oh my goodness, I think I'm actually a little bit more than the sport, especially as my body started breaking down. But a lot of gymnasts, they'll go through college, their body will hold up, and then by the time they graduate and they go into the workforce, they don't really know who they are or if they actually like the job that they're doing because all of their mental capabilities were put towards a very time-consuming sport.
Do you think for gymnasts that aren't Olympians, do you think college is the point where they kind of understand that there is something besides gymnastics, I guess you could say?
Yeah, definitely, because you have all these clubs, all of these opportunities, you know, all these internships. And as you become a student athlete, more focused on the student rather than the athlete, it kind of seems a little bit less important. At least in my case, that's what happened. All of my athlete responsibilities became a little bit less important because I started thinking, why am I missing this opportunity to see a guest speaker so I can weightlift? Like, you kind of get to a point where you kind of have that like identity crisis and you have to weigh those options out.
One of my favorite things she also said, I have a note here from when we were there. She said Mike Tirico from NBC told her that when she was kind of struggling in the 2020 Olympics to do, or 2021, to do journalistic coverage because she felt like I should be out there. Like, I wanted to be there. I got hurt. I can't be here just reporting on it. She said, Mike said, be where your feet currently are. I think that's just good advice for anyone who is transitioning from something to another thing. Lori was transitioning from being a Olympic gymnast, a gold medalist, to a college student. I mean, she's just among other students at NYU now. Which is, I'm sure, a crazy shift in your mind, but you kind of have to be down where your feet are and realize, you know, you only can look forward, I guess.
And that's a thing that we always said in gymnastics, especially as you get nervous at competitions, it's just one skill at a time. You have to think about what you're doing right now, because if you think a little too far ahead, you're going to fall. You're going to do basically what your worst fear was. But another thing that I thought was really interesting that she said was she talked about how she had to learn how to be bad at things because you spend your entire life doing this sport. And then when you finally get exposed to everything else that you've had no experience in, it's really hard to take in that you are probably going to be bad at a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I will never bowl because I'm terrible at bowling and it's embarrassing, but
I wonder what that's like. I don't know. It's not that hard. I don't know.
You gotta give some quick context.
I at the Turkey Bowl, the WZ&E Turkey Bowl, the charity event, I was just 6 points ahead of the absolute worst bowler at the entire
40.
Event.
Yeah.
out of 40 people. So
yeah. I would laugh, but I was probably in the 30s too. Like I didn't do it. Well, I was okay. I played okay, but not great.
Yeah.
Ben, you were supposed to bowl with us, and then you got booted. You would have been a great bowler.
Yeah.
You definitely got that like Southside Chicago bowling
exactly.
skill.
Exactly. Yeah. That's where we did all of our birthday parties. It was always bowling? Brunswick Arena.
Kaylee, have you tried to bowl? Like where did this come from in the conversation? Like, do you try and like you were specifically bad at it?
Yeah, one time we went to the bowling alley at ISU here, and I was so terrible. And honestly, it kind of highlighted the fact that I never did normal things as a kid like that.
Yeah.
And even like we can take bowling as an example. Like a lot of gymnasts didn't have bowling birthday parties because they could risk getting hurt from doing something as simple as bowling, like no like trampoline birthday parties, nothing of that nature. So you're not really getting like a normal kid experience or normal social interaction.
And then is it a little weird though, as someone that like played a competitive sport well for so long, to do say a sport just with your friends and like not do it? Like for example, like I'm a journalist, but like what you do in terms of print writing is not my forte. Like there's certain things that people specialize in, but like I don't know, is it weird in terms of the amount of competitive nature that I'm sure you gained from your whole lifetime of being a gymnast that like you play a different sport with your friends and you're like all of a sudden you're not, you know, the best one out there?
It's really hard to leave that competitive and perfectionist mindset behind. And I noticed that a lot of gymnasts, especially, and even Lori Hernandez talked about it a little bit, how she kind of took those negative things from gymnastics into real life and had to learn how to kind of decompress it and not enact on those when you're just hanging out and playing like board games, for example. Like I'll get really competitive during Monopoly. And it's just some of those things where you realize like, because when you're at a gymnastics meet, you're going up against all these gymnasts that are, you know, you've trained the same hours, you have the same mindset, everyone's kind of in the same boat there, and it really comes down to who can take the pressure the best and who has the best skills. So a little bit of mental and physical there. But when you play a game like Monopoly, you know, it's not that serious. It's not the end of the world if you lose Monopoly.
Well, I feel like your entire gymnastic career, from what Lori told us, your foot's always on the gas. Like she said, they didn't even attend the opening ceremony in Rio because they were training. Like they had to sleep the night before. Like you never take your foot off the gas. You never stop and smell the roses when you are just training to be that person. And then it all comes to a screeching halt and you have an identity crisis. And that was so cool to hear Lori kind of say, hey, I came to terms with it. It's okay. Telling a room full of college gymnasts, you're going to be okay. It was a really moving experience, I thought.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that is also another reason why gymnastics is just so time consuming and like emotionally and mentally consuming in that way, is because you are always on the go. And even your decisions, I mean, like any sport, but even your decisions outside of the sport, as much as even going to a bowling birthday party, can affect your season.
We've had Kaylee on a number of times discussing gymnastics, never with as high profile as a guest of a gold medalist. But it's been great to have you on again, Kaylee. We appreciate it. And thank you to Lori Hernandez. We'll be right back on the Red Zone with some talk about the Bears, sadly. Welcome back to the Red Zone, 103.3 WZND. Braden and Ben and I are joined by Kaylee, who's been here, and Jameson Warfield of WZND's programming and news and sports. Jameson, great to have you on the show.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
We're doing a starting five for this episode as Kaylee and Jameson are sharing a mic as our football guest for the second half of the show, getting back to traditional Red Zone values and doing football for the entire second half. The entire second half of commercial-free football with just two PSAs in between Pick Six and the Bears. Well, the Bears are 6-3. They play the Vikings this week at Soldier Field. I can't wait. Trubisky and the boys are looking really good. Nagy in his first year as coach, they're looking really swell. I can't wait.
Did you just jump out of a time machine?
I'm being delusional, yeah. I'm being. I got that off Jaquan Brisker's My Hero on Instagram. It's a great fan account. Great account. They've been being delusional this year, and they just, after every Bears game, they post about what happened that week in 2018. It's a great team win. Like, wow. And they say stuff like that, and all the comments are like, bro's losing his mind. But yeah, that's really what it feels like to be a Bears fan right now. I don't even want to watch the game. Like, after today's Red Zone at 7, I'm going to go get a... my groceries. We had Pat McAfee today talking about the Bears quarterback history on ESPN. And
Mitch Trubisky is the headliner.
That Mitch Trubisky is the picture, who is probably in the top five of that quarterback history, which is just terrible in and of itself. Jameson, you're our guest, so I want you to start. What? I mean, this is an obligatory Bears segment because they're playing Thursday Night Football. You wanted to do this, so the floor is yours.
Yeah, well, I don't think any of us are happy to talk about the Bears, but, like, they're playing in less than 30 minutes, and there's a chance that we win against the other worst team in the NFL, and I'd like to talk about our hope for the future. Do you guys think we have any hope for the future?
Yeah, kind of. Sure.
Lots of confidence from Hudsy.
Well, as long as no guest comes on and tells me that Tyson Bagent is the future, we can continue to move this one right along. But yeah, I mean, I like the Montez Sweat move. That was a big one. I think Ryan Poles is definitely building a defense that's looked better as of late. It's just more about getting Justin Fields back and evaluating him towards the end of the year, because you're going to have a big decision to make come around draft time, because you're probably going to end up having two picks in the top five, and there's a lot of quarterbacks available.
Right, absolutely. Me personally, I am anti using that first round pick for a quarterback, but I don't know what you guys feel.
Well, it's kind of funny tonight's game, and this is like one quip I'll add, because like if we win, we just get a better pick because the Panthers lose, and if we lose, we get a better pick because we lose. So either way, one of us is getting a benefit pick. So I guess if there's one silver lining of tonight's game, it's because the Bears have the Panthers' next first round pick. I don't know. I just don't like Eberflus. Like, especially like it's like the last couple weeks, I've just like grown to hate the guy. Like, it's just, and then you got his press conference yesterday, as Ben was making fun of off air. Like, is Justin playing tomorrow? Yeah, he's doubtful. But is he playing? No. Why is he doubtful? We'll see. Like, he's just coach talking tonight.
So yeah. He will not serve as the backup.
Nagy used to do the same thing. It's just a circle. It's a flat circle of just Bears hatred for me, because I grew up a Bears fan. I want to stick being a Bears fan. It's just so difficult to be a fan of this team. They're going nowhere. Roquan Smith said it. He loved the city. He wishes he could have lived here. He just didn't see the team going anywhere.
No, that's crazy, because he was crying last year as he was saying his goodbyes to everyone.
Yeah, he said it was great.
He said he wanted to be a Bear for life, and now he said, I'm happy I'm not there because I'd be ruining my career.
The first part of his statement was, before he said that, was, I loved it there. I wish I could have. I missed those guys, but I didn't want to ruin my career.
Okay.
So well, he's got a point.
Are you guys just giving up on Justin Fields?
No.
Like, he's been hurt. Like, he's not... it's not like he's just been horrible all year.
No, he was pretty good before he got hurt.
Wait, who said that?
Well, no one said
that. I think you asked, like, there is a possibility that...
It was me. I said, you want to see him play because you want to at least have an evaluation if you're going to have two top five picks with a pretty stacked quarterback class.
I don't know. I don't know.
I'm personally against it.
Yeah, no,
but it's at least a valid point for not the fans, but the front office to make a judgment on what they think. Because they didn't draft this. The front office didn't draft this guy.
Just real quick. I feel like even if Fields turns out not to be the guy that's going to replace him needs to have a better team than he would inherit should you just pick someone this year. And it would take a little bit more time. I think ultimately you're not going – if you end up getting that much better that you seem like you have a solid team, then you're not going to have a high enough draft pick to get the next, superstar. But I don't know. I just feel like you've got to have someone around you. If you are going to put the exact same situation around your next quarterback that you're going to attempt, you're just going to turn into a cycle like the Jets all the time of just like wasting good quarterbacks.
I mean, the Bears have already done that for their entire franchise besides 1 year. And I don't even think the Bears have that bad of a roster. I think it goes back to what Mikey said. This coaching is horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, whether it's the head coach that is supposed to be a defensive genius, and while the defense is playing better,
so
still not very
geniuses.
Good. You have Luke Getsy, who just decides to call screen passes all day back and forth, and you have a quarterback that could, and I'm talking about Justin Fields here, you have a quarterback that can run while also throw the ball deep if he needs to, and they just limit him when he plays. But then you see Tyson Bagent come up, and the first game they're trying to air it out with him and get him running, and it's just it makes you question everything.
This team, it makes me so mad. Jameson, take it away. Tell me something about the Bears. I don't even want to talk about it.
Absolutely. I do agree with Ben. You know, it's the scheming for me. When I watch a football game, the thing I get the most upset about is, like, it's 3rd and 10. why in God's name would you ever throw a screen pass on third and 10?
So it, Bears.
It's so frustrating because there is no cohesion when you can't have an offensive coordinator who can actually run plays. And if you want to build around Fields, which I believe you that you can do,
mm-hmm.
you need to have coaching staff that believes in him. You need to have an offensive line that can block for him. But I do believe another bright spot, we have great wide receivers and tight ends that can work for Fields if we can find a way to make it work.
As someone that's a Raiders fan, I will say that third downs are really important because 3 years ago, the Raiders were amazing on first down, and you had third and Renfro, and like you felt like even if you were kind of having a rough, you know, couple plays in a row, you still had an opportunity because you had a good playbook that could get you out of some jams. Ever since McDaniels took over, it's been like the absolute opposite of whatever might work is what's chosen. And so the Bears, same thing, just like you said, just coming up with stupid ideas in situations that you shouldn't have to, and that's how you ruin a team that has some talent.
Why is Bajent still playing? Somebody please tell me. What are you seeing in him? What are you gaining?
I'm not seeing anything, but you might as well let him just ride it out.
They're tanking. He's young. That's why.
Because he's young, and maybe he could be a serviceable backup for the Bears, or maybe you could get some trade value from him in the offseason if he's not the guy. But at the same time, we're going to hear it tonight based on whatever they tell them in their production meetings, because I go back to that Chargers game on Sunday night 2 weeks ago, and whatever the SID or whatever was telling the production guys, I think it's Mike Tirico and
Chris Collinsworth,
they were just all over Tyson Bagent.
They brought him back up this Sunday's game too, like during the middle of the game. It was, who was it this Sunday? It was Bills and Bengals, and they still randomly brought him up again. They were like, I think Josh Allen threw like an interesting pass, and Collinsworth was like, "Yeah, I've seen a lot of that, and this Bears guy, Bagent."
That's what worries me about what could potentially happen when Justin's back, and that's also what's worrying me about some of these quotes that Eberflus is saying with him just being inactive. I don't think they believe that Fields is the guy, that Bajent's the guy, but is he going to have a short leash when he comes back? I have no idea.
Right. The problem with Bajent is it's just enough where you can get this idea of a great QB who might be there if you don't look at the stats. If you look at the stats, obviously, like, needless to say, 4 turnovers last week is just not a starting quarterback in the NFL.
And in a game that you could have easily won in the fourth quarter, had multiple chances to win in the fourth quarter, got defensive stops in the fourth quarter, and your quarterback is turning the ball over consistently. Just annoying.
Something I do want to make sure to say before, I think Kaylee's about to speak, but...
No, you go for it.
They got to get DJ Moore involved. Ever since they went away, they've gone away from him essentially since that huge Washington win on Thursday Night Football a couple weeks ago. Get him involved, especially against his former team. I think this is a big one for him, and I hope he has a huge game tonight.
Here's my thing. If this guy is throwing like 4 interceptions, it seems like, from last game, why is the media so all over him? Like, what do you guys think?
The conspiracy is that, and I don't know if I believe it, but the conspiracy that Ben was alluding to is that they're telling broadcasters are in the production meetings like, "Hey, we want you to hype up this guy. We want our fans to believe in this guy." I don't think I believe it, but they're saying it's their way to gradually transition away from Fields for the rest of the season, trade him, and then draft a new quarterback. And they are going to want people to buy into Bajent just to replace him during the offseason, which I could totally see happening. I don't know if I believe the conspiracy, though.
Right. I think the big thing is Bajent's, he's just a storyline. You know, you've got a kid from a D3 school, and all of a sudden he's starting in the NFL. It's really easy to hype this guy up, even if he's really not all there, just because, you know, it looks good if he's succeeding.
Exactly. It's your classic feel-good story, like, oh, the Bears are 2-7, but they won on Thursday Night Football against the Panthers, and Bryce Young, who was the undisputed number one overall pick, got beat by a D2 quarterback. Like, I can totally see it now, and I can see them hyping him up on the call tonight. Like, I can totally see it, and I see why it's a story. Don't get me wrong, but... if Bryce Young and the Panthers win, they're going to get back to, oh, well, they traded the pick. They could have drafted Bryce Young. And then C.J. Stroud putting up 52 points last week. Oh, they could have drafted C.J. Stroud. It's just Trubisky and Mahomes all over again. It's a what if. It's a why did they do the things that they did? And why are they not using D.J. Moore, who they traded for that first overall pick? It's overall just completely frustrating. And the storylines make themselves. Kaylee, we have 2 minutes. I want to hear about the Seahawks.
You want to hear about the Seahawks?
Your Shocks, yeah. They've been a good team, but they've had some tough losses here and there.
Yeah, I think the last few weeks have honestly been a little rough, or especially the last game. But honestly, like, me and my dad were talking about it, and going into it, we didn't have too much hope. But I'm honestly, I know that the schedule isn't as difficult as some of the other teams in the NFL are having right now, but I think that they're doing pretty well. And then they were like number one in the NFC West for a hot second there, and I believed it. I rode that for a little bit. I was.
It can happen.
Yeah.
It can happen. They still are first.
Yeah, it could happen.
West
the Rams are losing games they shouldn't to the terrible Packers. I think it could still happen. We'll talk a lot about the terrible Packers, the terrible Bears, and a interesting NFL slate when we come back for Pick Six. One of the three WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation, or as Kaylee and JMO have been calling it all night, WZND 2. I think the quote was directly when I walked back into the news and fortune room, WZND is so good, where's WZND 2? So I don't know. It's an interesting theory. Theory can only take you so far. We'll move on to the Pick Six segment. Move on to Pick Six, where theory can only take us so far as we pick some games tonight.
When the Cubs booth in the 1980s, when it's a 9-0 game, just rambling.
Well, it's an Oppenheimer
and
quote. Did anyone get that? It's an Oppenheimer quote. But anyway.
It was super niche, Mikey.
It's not super niche.
Film bro.
You knew it right away when I said it.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, you did. So you can't be talking. All right, Carolina and the Bears. I'm going with Carolina.
Ooh. We just spent 15 minutes, maybe more like 13 minutes, ripping on the Bears.
That's why I picked Carolina.
But I am taking the Bears. There's no way they lose this. Deonta Foreman's going to run up everyone's gut, and they're going to win.
Good use. Braden?
I'm also going Carolina, and I also think that he'll run up the gut, you know?
Okay, all right. Our guests today are both Kaylee and Jameson, and they have WZND2 over there has agreed to a countdown method where I count them down, and on three, they both say who they think will win. We'll see if this causes chaos. All right, 1, 2, 3.
Bears.
Okay, well, they're one for one. I'm picking the same thing, if you heard the high five. So Steve went with the Bears as well, so I am on a lonely island with the Carolina Panthers. Let's go, Panthers. Moving on to the Packers and the Steelers.
Wait, did you say Carolina?
Mm-hmm. Oh, you did. Never mind. Yeah. Never mind. I had that written down, too.
I said Chicago.
No, you said Carolina.
No, I
swear, we got to look at the tape.
You said, I was confused because you said Carolina. I also think he's going to run it up the
I definitely did, but I haven't written down Chicago. My pick is Chicago. I don't want to pick Carolina.
Okay,
I'm
so
sorry.
I am the only Panther. I am the only Panther.
Yeah,
that's why I was confused. I was going to cut you off, and then Mikey went into his little ramble, his little spiel.
Introduce the next game.
We got Packers-Steelers. Packers coming off a win against the terrible Rams. Mikey, I'm going to start with you first. Tell me, what are you picking, and what is Steve picking?
We're both picking Pittsburgh.
Okay.
Pittsburgh has been like sneaky. Like, I have to finally face the music that Pittsburgh's still going to go 500 or so this year. They always find a way. I hate them. Yeah. Kenny Pickett stinks, but I'm going. Steve and I both went with the Steelers.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you. Kenny Pickett's really not good, but that defense is one of the best in the league. And the Steelers are going to be 6-3 after this week. So they are going to be way over 500.
Mm. Braden?
Steelers.
No comment.
No, I don't think either of these teams deserve comment.
All right, WZ2.
Steelers are about to be 6-3.
Yeah,
they
most
don't
quiet 6-3
six and
ever.
Three. They just happen
that
to
entire
be
NFC North, the Browns also are about to be 6-3.
Yeah, but at least people talk about that defense because they beat the Niners and stuff.
True.
How many times have the Steelers played the Raiders already? It seems like twice, but I know it's only once. Okay, ready? Titans. Ready over there? 1, 2, 3.
Packers.
We got a rock, paper, scissors.
Rock, paper, scissors.
Okay, can I give my reasoning for Packers?
Yes.
And it's...
How about they both give their reasoning and then we pick based on their reasoning?
Okay.
Oh, okay.
You're not going to like my reasoning. It's because my mom and my grandmother are both huge Packer fans, and I know that they would be sad if I didn't pick the
Wrong
Packers.
Wrong card to say that to, Kaylee. Give us your case.
Mine is kind of out of hope, too. I saw a tweet that said Najee Harris looks like he's running in jeans.
Fogerson, Ben, let's vote. I'm going with the Steelers.
That's a funny
way. Here's the thing. We're all picking Steelers, so we could pick the Packers to make it not pick
Ooh, five. To shake up the standings.
Ooh.
I agree, actually. We're going to go Green Bay for the guest then.
I do like that.
That was a 2,000 IQ play right there.
I do
there.
Like that tweet, though, because I have Najee Harris on my team, and I wish I could just he's got weights in his feet. It's the worst. It's so awful to watch.
The Ravens and the Browns. This will actually be a fun one. We went through the first two like mid matchups. This one will actually be fun. Those are like the obligatory. We have to do the local teams. The Ravens have been really, really good, cementing themselves as a possible favorite for it all. And the Browns defense has been stellar. I am going to have to go with Cleveland for that very reason, though. I think the Ravens cannot be stopped on the run, but if there's one defense that can do it, I kind of like the Browns. They stopped C-Mac, so I'm going to go with Cleveland.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Lamar Jackson has been on his tear of just taking down NFC teams, which he's never lost to. It's going to end this week. Deshaun's going to be back and maybe finally come out with Cleveland. So
Steve also went with Cleveland. We'll actually do Fogerson versus then the countdown.
Baltimore, give me the Ravens, and you know why?
Why?
Because I just feel like, so the Browns have a really good running game, and they've always had that. But the Ravens are just really tricky to match up against and hard to game plan. And I just feel like also, like, both of these teams are good. Either one of these teams could win, and you wouldn't be surprised. Like, there's just a lot of talent to go around, so.
Steve went with the Browns as well. All right, in the corner. One, two, three.
Ravens!
Oh, look at that. Look at that. They both have one now. That actually, you guys have had two that you were the same, and then we just kind of decided Packers for you guys for our sake. And this will give us a quick halftime break in the first three games. Ben, do you have the standings in front of you or no?
Correct, I do.
You want to read them off?
Yes. At the top, Steve, continuing his miracle run, 20 games above 37-17. The guests, after a 6-0 week where nobody picked.
America picked.
34-20. Myself and third at 30-24. Right under me is Mikey at 29-25. And Braden, sitting on a lonely island at last at 28-26.
Ben gave me a look when he said nobody picked. That's why we have two guests this week. I'm trying to make up for it. We didn't have a guest last week, and it was just a discombobulated week, and America picked. That's what we call it when we just go with the odds on favorite. And then I told Ben, if the odds on favorite's going 6-0, maybe the rest of us should kind of pay attention to that moving forward.
That is true.
Move on to the Niners and the Jaguars. Steve went with the Jaguars. I have Brock Purdy in fantasy. I would really like to see him bounce back. So for that reason, I'm going to pick the 49ers. And I think they are still a really good team. I think they got kind of caught up in like a losing streak recently. But after the bye week, they should be able to kind of snap back into it. I don't think it's time to panic. And I think they'll beat the Jaguars. So I'm going with the Niners. Ben?
These are two teams coming off a bye week. So they're both rested up.
I just meant because the Niners were on that losing streak before their bye.
Jacksonville on a 5-game winning streak right now. How about that? But some pretty mediocre teams. Niners got to bounce back. I think the Jaguars are very good. I think this could be the best game of the Sunday slate, but I'm going to take the Niners bouncing back in Jacksonville.
Braden Fogerson.
I'm going with the Niners because I am benching Trevor Lawrence, and if I bench Trevor Lawrence, it better be for good reason. So
smooth.
Yeah.
Well, if Trevor Lawrence like plays insane, I know who to blame.
I know. Well, I started Stroud over him, so hopefully. The odds are good there.
Hopefully. But, yeah. We'll have to see. All right, corner. One, two, three.
49ers. Oh!
All right, both of you guys make your case. We're a little bit above time right now, so I want to hear this.
Well, I'm just not a 49ers fan, and also I'm starting Trevor Lawrence in one of my other leagues, okay. So it's more of hope.
This pick six has a lot of fantasy implications for this pick. All of us are talking about who we're starting, and that's what we're picking. Jameson?
Yeah, I'm kind of on the same boat with you, Mikey. You're off of the bye. You have a second to kind of regain your footing. If you're a 49er, you can go, okay, hey, we've got the weapons. We've got the play calling. This is not a Jaguars team we need to be worried about. If they can put their best foot forward, I see the 49ers taking it.
I agree with Jameson, but I kind of want to make them pick Jacksonville so all of us have a point over the guest. Because the guest is, like, above all three of us. So I think
we should team up. We should get rid of the 6-0 from last week because no guests did it. And whatever they get this week, we double that amount.
Mm.
That's got to be tampering. You just said that on air, though, so people can criticize us for that.
Yeah, as a guest, that seems unfair.
If you said that during like the break or something, maybe I would have considered it. But now,
hey, I get to edit this thing after.
You could always edit that one out.
Only people that can criticize are people listening right now,
listening live on air. I think we should make them pick the Jaguars for that reason.
Let us rock paper scissors for it.
All right, fine. Rock paper scissors for it.
Do you want to do 2 out of 3 or?
I could play-by-play this. Okay. All right, so Kaylee won with rock. They both went scissors. They both went scissors again. Jameson went with scissors, so now it's 1-1. Kaylee won the first one. All right, game 7, rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Is there anything better in sports than a game 7?
Rock, paper, scissors on the radio. We've never seen this in Red Zone. Kaylee wins with the rock over the scissors, so that means we're going with Jacksonville, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, look at that. I almost lost sight of what we were doing rock, paper, scissors for. Move on to the Jets and the Raiders. Braden, I'll let you start.
No.
You're a Raiders fan. You have to start.
Are they back? I'll pick them. They make me so nervous every week. And, like, now that I have no NASCAR to distract myself, I'm going to be just, like, sad if they don't win. So I'm just nervous. But I'm picking them. I'm taking them.
Yeah, I like the Raiders vibe right now. Obviously, the Jets want to get a couple more wins before whatever Aaron Rodgers is doing gets him back. I like AOC under center.
You just like saying AOC because I call him AOC.
All right, give me the Raiders.
So I'm going with the Jets. Steve's going with the Raiders because I, like Ben said, I think the Jets need to win games they should win because they seem to still have this false hope that Rodgers is going to come back and lead them all the way to the promised land. So I'm going to go with the Jets. They're playing for more. All right, corner. 1, 2, 3.
Raiders!
Let's go.
The Raiders.
Ben, who'd you go with again? I forgot to write down. The Raiders?
Raiders. Wait, nice. Did anyone pick?
I've been on the Lonely Island twice now, so I could get 2 points up. Raiders. Or I can go 2 points down. Yeah. We look at it glass half full here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, we do. Moving on to the Broncos and the Bills. I think I might be in Lonely Island again. I'm going with... We don't have the button anymore. Broncos country. Let's ride. We used to have a button for that sounder. I'm gonna add it back. Broncos country. Let's ride. I just traded for Russell Wilson in fantasy. He's having a great year, like fantasy wise. The stats are there. Just needs to start getting the production. Got a couple decent wins, and the Bills are the worst they've been in the Josh Allen era.
I will say, knowing Kaylee, she likes Russell Wilson enough. You might not be on the Lonely Island.
Not if Jameson takes the Bills. Maybe rock paper scissors.
This is the worst primetime week of all time. On Thursday night we got Panthers Bears. Sunday Night Football, we got Jets Raiders. Monday Night Football, Broncos Bills. Could you ask for any three worse matchups? I'm going to take the Bills. Obviously, they're struggling. They didn't look horrible against Cincinnati. Cincinnati's just really hot right now. Josh Allen's having a really good year besides turnovers. They're better than the Broncos.
This is actually a good idea to go on a mini side tangent. I don't think the NFL is focusing on making primetime games the marquee matchups as much anymore. And I feel like everyone just expects that the NFL made their schedule hoping they were all marquee matchups. And I don't think that's actually the case. But I am going to go Buffalo, and I can see the reason for Denver. Denver was able to beat Kansas City in primetime.
True.
Buffalo's honestly definitely worse than Kansas City. But I don't know. I'd still go Buffalo here.
Connor Bedard has 2 goals tonight.
And an assist.
And an assist, 3 points against the Tampa Bay Lightning, 4-2 at the end of the first. I just got a text that Connor has 2 goals. We'll go to WZND2 in the corner.
Corner.
Ferguson, who'd you pick? I was looking at Bedard.
I picked the Bills.
Okay. Sorry, I don't mean to disrespect you like that. Okay, so we'll see if I'm on a lonely island.
I think we're going to agree with this one.
1, 2, 3.
Broncos!
Okay, look at that. Broncos country.
That's right.
Mr. Unlimited. I always wanted to say that on air.
I was just watching that video yesterday. There's like a whole Russell Wilson being cringe compilation on YouTube. Like all of his Subway commercials. Like, I don't have a nickname, but I think my nickname is Mr. Unlimited. Because he's my quarterback now in fantasy, so I got to buy in. I can't say he's cringe anymore. I changed my team name to Let's Ride. No, I didn't actually. I haven't gone that far. Maybe I will eventually.
If the Broncos win, maybe I will.
If I don't pick up my phone, it means I'm dialed in.
That was another Russ quote. Or doing calisthenics on the airplane is always a classic. That was last season. And then Justin Tucker making fun of that by saying it was because the team was doing high knees on the airplane. God, I love Russell Wilson. Was he always like Kaylee? You were somewhat closer to Russell growing up than we were. Like, were there still stories like that for the Seahawks? Like, I didn't remember hearing it as often.
He was always like that, but he was good on the Seahawks. So right. I guess not a lot of people talked about it or made fun of it as much. And I think that like when it became a big thing when he moved to the Broncos, especially I remember watching like his opening with the Broncos in Milner Library. And just, like, half laughing the entire time.
Against the Seahawks.
Yes.
And the famous Geno quote of, like, I didn't write back. That was what he said. And
me off and didn't write back.
Didn't write back. Well, people are starting to write him off, and he's not writing back is the problem. Geno really needs to get back to not writing back for Kaylee's sake.
For context, Kaylee's from the Pacific Northwest and a Seahawks fan. We never really mentioned that. We just said, Kaylee, you have a connection to Russell Wilson, and never really explained why. So... that's the context.
And I'm from the Midwest. Like, what's your Pacific Northwest? She's from the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I guess you're technically right. Where does that make you from? We're not from the same. Well, I guess we're both technically from the Midwest.
Kaylee's actually from the Pacific.
I know she is, but what does that make you? Midwest? St. Louis doesn't
count. I'm not from St. Louis. I'm from East Central Illinois.
Anything that's more south of Bloomington Normal is St. Louis. This is the end of the show. I had a professor one time say the only reason Bloomington Normal exists is because it's the perfect bathroom break between Chicago and St. Louis. Have a good night.
This has been Red Zone.
Robinson looking out, drives inside, going to find Mary Crompton for her first three of the day, and it's good.
Curry owned the league last year, personal awards and numbers.
We'll take off with you next Thursday at 6. For now, you can listen to any past broadcasts on WZND.com. Touchdown in 3, 2, 1.
Grady, I've got fun.